The Expat Files, Living in Latin America with John Mueller, Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico way, that's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the one-of-a-kind show that tells you what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. It's a fact that millions of Europeans and North Americans have already made that big move south of the border. You might know someone who already has. Maybe it's your dream to do it someday. Well, it's a big move, and it's not to be taken lightly. And that's just what this show is all about. So let's get started.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
If you took a poll in the first world, probably everyone you asked would say he or she loved animals, especially the people that have them for dinner. Now, if you change the question a little bit and ask first world people what they think about exotic animals, I'm sure most people would say they like them too, but not necessarily as pets or for dinner. To me, it's always been a bit sad when I see somebody up north who owns an exotic pet, whether it's a snake, a monkey, a toucan, whatever. I don't much like seeing them in cages, in pet shops. For me, even zoos can be depressing sometimes. Now, I don't know what it is about humans. It seems that every culture loves to catch exotic wild animals and put them on display, preferably in their own tiny houses. And much of the time, people get bored, lose interest, give them away, or release them in the wild, and they die well before their time. Now, everybody knows that Latin America is a land filled with exotic animals. In fact, there's so many exotic animals not yet cataloged, scientists are never going to get to them all. And hopefully, new ones will be popping up faster than we can kill them off. Ecotourism is one of the big reasons people come down to Latin America. And first world travelers spend billions a year on specialized gear, accommodations, and specially chartered nature tours just to see exotic animals in their own habitat. And that's one of the main reasons people go to Costa Rica. They've heard it's a place where ecotourism is actually civilized. And you might have heard that in 1946, Costa Rica had the good judgment to completely eliminate their military, which makes it one of a handful of countries in Latin America where you won't see military guys in uniforms carrying Uzis on every street corner. And first-time travelers to Costa Rica are usually aware that in 1946, the president eliminated the military. I'm sure in 1946, the president never knew that his move to eliminate the military would spur a huge future tourist boom. How did he know it was just the shot in the arm that a country like that needed to make tourism their number one industry? But he wasn't clairvoyant. Every expat I know agrees it was just dumb luck. But it sure makes you wonder why none of the other countries in Latin America have followed suit. Costa Rica has no military, and look what it did for them. But the real problem in Latin America is the macho man syndrome. Every president and tin pot dictator wants his neighbors to think he's a tough guy, even if their militaries consist of nothing more than a bunch of farm boys with sixth grade educations, which is pretty much the reality down here. Macho men who don't even have enough aviation fuel to fly their rickety airplanes, much less enough ammo for their guns to have target practice. But we'll talk more about that in another show. But speaking of ecotourism in Costa Rica, it sounds good, but that too is not what it's cracked up to be. Just go to any tourist agency and pick up a pamphlet on Costa Rica, and you'll see that it's loaded with exotic, furry, happy, smiling animals. In fact, it's true. If you go to Costa Rica, you're bound to see exotic animals. And the same thing if you go to Peru, or Brazil, or Honduras, or any place in Latin America. And if you're in the jungle or out in the countryside, you'll see them in the wild. And when you pulled your car over because you just spotted a tree full of monkeys or toucans, you really feel happy that you got that glimpse of nature and a chance to take a few dozen photos so you can post them on Facebook. But you don't have to go to the jungle or drive 200 miles outside of a city to get a glimpse of some of the most rare, beautiful, exotic, and colorful animals. No, sir, you don't have to leave the big city at all to see the wonders of nature. And I'm not talking about the local zoo either. I'm not saying exotic lizards, frogs, snakes, and toads are living in the streets and alleys of San Jose, Costa Rica. After all, How many exotic animals can you see in a metropolitan city of about 1 million people? But the animals are there, all right, and not just a few either. There's thousands of them. Though how they live is not humane, and not at all what you'd like to think. Let me explain what I mean. Some years ago, on my very first trip down to Costa Rica, I was invited to a house party. It was in a quiet neighborhood in the center of San Jose, in a clean little two-bedroom house that most would consider lower middle class if it was in the first world. Now that night, there were quite a few people packed into that little house, and when I found the little bathroom and shut the door behind me, I heard a weak-sounding squawking noise coming from behind the shower curtain. And when I pulled the shower curtain back, I almost fell over. Inside a rusted cage about 3 feet high, there sat a 2.5 foot tall scarlet macaw parrot. They are the biggest and most majestic parrots in all of Latin America. In Spanish, they're called guacamayas. Now, I know just enough about parrots to know that this guy was probably 30 years old or more, and they can live to be 100. And I also know it's totally inhumane to keep a big parrot like that in a tiny cage where he's perched in his own crap and he barely has enough room to turn around, much less ever get a chance to spread his wings. Now let me tell you, that shower stall was so small that even if you let him out of the cage, he still couldn't have spread his wings. To me, he just looked sad and miserable. Now the young guy who was giving the party was a lawyer, and when I went back to the living room and sat on the sofa, someone introduced his wife to me. And naturally, I inquired about the bird. She told me he'd been in the family a long time, and that she got him about 5 years ago from her dad, who could no longer take care of him anymore. I said, "You mean he's been here in that cage for 5 years?" And she smiled and said, "Yeah, isn't he marvelous? Isn't he wonderful? Isn't he a great bird?" She said, "You know, I could sell him for a few $1,000s in the United States." And I said, "No, you can't, not legally, because you can't trade in those birds anymore. They're an endangered species, and some of them, especially the big ones like yours, when they're caged up in too small of a space, they become neurotic, and they start picking at themselves, and they start losing feathers and get bald spots and skin conditions and sores. And when you see one like that, it's just sad and pathetic." I probably shouldn't have said it, but I told her it was a tragedy, and that for me it was a sad thing to see that bird in that cage. He'd be better off in a zoo, anywhere but that cage. Well, needless to say, she didn't talk to me anymore for the rest of the night. I guess she was expecting me to compliment her on her bird. And it was a great specimen, even though he'd already picked up the bad habit of picking feathers off of one of his legs. And that was the only negative thing about the bird that the owner admitted to. It didn't even register with the owner that he was the cause of the bird's neurotic problems, that bird was being terribly mistreated. But the story doesn't end there. I stayed a few more months in Costa Rica and saw so much of the very same thing. One day I walked into a San Jose bakery. The place was hot. The ovens were going full blast. And near one of the ovens was another tiny cage. And this one had two beautiful toucans in it. Only one of them had part of his beak missing. And I asked the lady what happened to him. She said that they both were nervous and that they fight all the time. And not long ago, when they were fighting, one toucan scratched the other one's face and drew blood. And after that, the base of the beak got infected, and as that part of the beak grew out, it became soft and thin and fell off. And I said, "Couldn't a veterinarian give him antibiotics or something?" Then the other lady working behind the counter said, "Who's got $25 for antibiotics for a bird? I can get a new one for that." And you know, she's right. You walk around San Jose any day of the week, just go to one of the open-air markets, especially in the smaller towns. You could buy a monkey or a parrot or a toucan and some animals you've never even heard of before. And they sell them cheap, too. You can buy all manner of exotic animals down in Latin America for maybe 10% of what they'd charge you up in the first world. But I don't recommend it. That is, unless you plan on buying an exotic animal to save it from its current owner, who's more than likely abusing it and making its life miserable, and he doesn't even know it. And that's the sad part. Remember the scarlet macaw in the bathroom? Well, the guy who owns that is a lawyer. Now, don't you think he should know better? I mean, he's a professional. It really makes you wonder about the education system down there, that you could become a professional and not know the first thing about taking care of animals that are native to your own region. I can tell you that every expat I know has a few animal abuse stories just like that. And most of the time, you just have to keep your mouth shut. They don't want to hear it. Another bittersweet animal experience I had in Costa Rica was when I went to see the giant marine turtles crawl up out of the sea at night and lay their eggs on the beach. You know what I'm talking about. You probably saw it on the Nature Channel. Well, during a few weeks of the year, these giant leatherback turtles crawl up on shore and lay their eggs. The whole thing lasts about a half an hour, and you sit there with a flashlight, and you can watch the whole event live and up close. You can get so close to the turtle that you can put your hand on its shell. Well, the next day, after I'd seen the turtles lay their eggs the night before, I was in a small nearby town, and a little kid approached me with a basket. And inside the basket, he had dozens and dozens of turtle eggs that he and his friends had dug up the night before from the very same beach I'd been at. It seems that in Latin America, giant sea turtle eggs are something of a delicacy, though no expats I know would ever try them. Well, what makes the story even sadder is that the kid told me the prices have gone up on the turtle eggs, because every year they get harder to find and fewer turtles crawl up on shore and deposit their eggs. So what do you do about that? Every place the turtles lay their eggs in Latin America, from Mexico to Belize to Guatemala to Costa Rica to Honduras, little kids just like him dig out the eggs and sell them. It's one of the only ways they can pick up a little extra money or have a little extra protein for their diets. But still, for me, the worst abuses I've seen are with the exotic birds. And you see it in all classes of Latin society. You could pull over at a rest stop 100 miles from any city, and an old lady or a kid could be minding a fruit stand or selling coconuts, mangoes, or pineapples. And it wouldn't be unusual, right out in the middle of nowhere, to see a beautiful exotic bird, or two or three, crammed into a dirty, rusted, undersized cage. Yes, and in case you're wondering, in Latin America, they do have laws against cruelty to animals. But they don't enforce them. And everywhere you look, there's ample proof. Take, for example, public zoos. Every one of the 21 Latin American countries has at least one public zoo. Now, I really don't recommend that you ever visit a public zoo, because I pretty much can guarantee you're going to walk out of there thoroughly depressed. Because along with the fact that you're in a third world country, and that there's high levels of corruption and a chronic shortage of funds, and a chronic shortage of water, and most of the water that they do have is unsafe to drink or is visibly polluted, you also have to remember that most Latin American big cities are either in tropical or subtropical zones, which means that any animals that come from temperate zones, like most of the United States, Europe, Japan, northern China, Russia, well, any animals originating from those places are just going to lay around in their cages absolutely miserable in the heat and totally listless. And if you go to a Latin American zoo, that's just what you're going to see. I know you're thinking there must be some exceptions to that. Maybe in Argentina or Chile or some of the better off Latin American countries. Well, maybe, but I haven't seen one yet. But it might be a good idea to remember that nobody from the first world goes down to visit Latin America just to take in a zoo. And while I'm on about animals, there's another Latin American diversion you should never take in, because you'll be sorry. And I'm talking about the circus. Now, we all know in the first world, going to the circus is pretty much out of fashion. That's really old school stuff. And today's modern first world kids, with their iPods and Xboxes, they're just not interested in lions and tigers and bears. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised at all that if in the next 10 years, every circus in the first world completely disappeared, like the drive-in theater. But in Latin America, it's a completely different story. At any given time, in any big city in Latin America, there might be two or three big top circuses in town. Yep, south of the border, circuses are alive and well, and there's a lot of them out there and they're making money. Well, I take that back. The circus itself is alive and well, but the animals aren't. They're in terrible condition, they don't get any exercise, and because there's virtually no government regulation and no inspectors, nobody's watching the store. And the few animal rights activists that there are in Latin America, and there are some people who really care, they just can't seem to get any publicity or any real traction. But what can you really expect? Half the population of Latin America, 250 million people, live on less than $2 a day. And people are supposed to get excited about animal activism when millions of human beings are starving? I don't think so.
South of the border.
Sometimes around this time of year, Latins, mostly males, go on a massive buying spree. And I know that sounds like an oxymoron, because they have so little discretionary income. But what Latin men love to stock up around the holidays in huge quantities, that is besides cheap liquor, is pyrotechnics. I'm talking about fireworks, the real thing. I'm talking about the big stuff, the powerful stuff, the stuff that can blow your fingers off or blind you. Not the tame stuff, like the sparklers and the punks and the snakes. You know, the only stuff that's legal to light or blow off up in the first world. Just ask any expat about the Latins and their obsession for pyrotechnics, and you'll generally get an earful, especially from expat women, because they know in every big city, the use of fireworks is not only out of control, it can really be dangerous. And because Latin Americans have their own fireworks factories, there's practically no limit to the size of the bombs and firecrackers that they make. In fact, if you're old enough to remember when you were a kid, when you or someone you knew got a hold of a firecracker called an M80, or something even bigger called a cherry bomb, then you probably remember stories of kids getting their fingers blown off, or at least reading about accidents like that in your local paper. Well, let me just tell you that around December 1st of every year, little portable sales booths start popping up all over Latin America. In fact, most cities have areas where you can find row after row after row of these little fireworks booths. And if you remember how powerful M80s and cherry bombs were, and why they've been outlawed in the first world for at least 30 or 40 years, imagine your surprise when you walk up to one of these little fireworks booths and you could buy a firecracker as big as your fist that's 5 times stronger than anything you ever blew off as a kid. And it's hard to imagine that any 5-year-old kid with 50 cents can buy a bomb that could kill a cow. And that's just what they do. Kids, boys specifically, scrape up what little money they have. They get together with their friends, and they stockpile powerful firecrackers and fireworks, the kind of stuff that's long been banned in the first world. And they bring it all out of the closet on December 31st at midnight. Now, this is the night that drives all expats nuts, especially the women. Though I have to say, the first time a male expat experiences it, you're a little bit in awe for a moment, and you might even feel a little nostalgic for the days when you and your buddies did exactly the same thing, when you blew off your own stash and you terrorized your own neighborhood. But here's where it's different. When you were a kid, on the 4th of July back in the States, there were usually some sporadic bursts of fireworks pretty much in every neighborhood, but there was no plan. There was nothing organized about it. In fact, grown-ups would rarely put up with it. And that's why it was always hush-hush, and you and your buddies would sneak around to do your damage. And if you got caught, your parents would surely take your stuff away and ground you. But in Latin America, it's a ritual, and it's so accepted that the parents are actually in on it. So let me explain how it works. On December 31st, at about 6 o'clock at night, practically every middle-class Latin family has a house party. It's pretty much their version of Thanksgiving dinner. And they have big spreads of food laid out, just like Thanksgiving in the first world, but with a lot of typical local dishes that you'll never find in a first world buffet. On that day, it's also a big tradition in Latin America to spread dozens of pine needle branches all around your living room floor. And sometimes they'll catch fire as their kids run in and out of the front door lighting their fireworks. So at midnight, in every little town in Latin America, people come out of their front doors, walk into the middle of the street, and start lighting off their fireworks. Now imagine for a minute you're in a city of 500,000 people. You walk out of the street at midnight, and as far as your eye can see down one side of the street, and as far as your eye can see down the other, everybody is lighting off fireworks at the same time. At that moment, not only is it deafening, but it's suddenly bright as day. And if you look up at the sky in any direction, you'll see thousands of Roman candles and rockets being launched from all parts of the city. And if you look around at the street that you're on, you'll notice there's some competition going on between families. And you'll realize it's their version of keeping up with the Joneses, that the neighbor with the biggest house and the nicest car, or motorcycle, that is if no one on the block can afford a car. Now that guy will also have the biggest box of fireworks and the best selection of rockets and aerial bombs. It's the one time of year all the neighbors are outside at the same time, and they can see firsthand which of their neighbors is having a good year financially, He's the one showing off the biggest display and giving the neighbors the impression that he's got money to burn, or at least more money than they have. Now, this huge, pointless display goes on for about 15 minutes to a half an hour, or until all the fireworks are pretty much all used up. And by that time, every cat, dog, bird, and chicken in the neighborhood is cowering under a bed somewhere, or in shock. Now, one of the unfortunate side effects of having such a big display of pyrotechnics, when at the same time everybody's sitting at home having a party and drinking, soon enough, you start hearing a different kind of a noise, the unmistakable sound of gunshots. And just like in the Hollywood movies, every neighborhood has a cowboy or two. And it's not uncommon, especially on December 31st, to see a bunch of guys in the street standing around, laughing and having a good time, maybe drinking a little too much, then suddenly one of them pulls out a gun and starts firing into the air. Now, with all the other massive pyrotechnic displays going on, almost no one gives it a second thought. In fact, any night of the week in any Latin American city, don't be surprised if you hear a gunshot or two going off in the dead of the night. But if you live in certain parts of Chicago, Miami, New York, or LA, you'll hear the same thing. Anyway, the big problem with macho guys who shoot their guns in the air at parties is the law of gravity. What goes up must come down. And the fact that most Latin American houses, no matter how humble, are built with a skylight or two, it's not really that unusual to walk into a house and look up at a skylight and see a duct tape patch or some kind of homemade fix designed to cover up a stray bullet hole. Now, I want to tell you that the first time I saw a bullet hole in a skylight, I was not amused. And then I came to realize that though there may be bullet holes here and there, in some neighborhoods definitely more than others, I also never met anyone who's actually been hit by a stray bullet. Although you read about it in the paper all the time, just like you do in the first world. In fact, just this week, the Honduran press is reporting that in Honduras, 4 people are treated in hospital each day for stray bullet wounds. One expat I know, living in Nicaragua, explained it to me like this. He said, you know, when a middle-class Latin gets a bullet hole in a skylight, he doesn't have the $300 it takes to get it replaced or repaired properly. Instead, he covers it with duct tape or stuffs it with a wad of cotton. And that's it, as far as he's concerned. As long as it's sealed off and doesn't leak water, to him it's fixed. End of problem. But if some first-world guy happens to walk in and notice it, even if that bullet hole was made 15 years ago, well, the first world person is going to duck and try to find a way out. He's going to think it's a shooting gallery and that some bad guy's sitting outside right now reloading his Uzi for round 2. Yep, being an expat is all about perception and about your comfort zone, which can be quite different from one day to the next. But let me get back to December 31st and the Latin American fascination with fireworks. Now, after the Latins have lit off most of their fireworks and the parties are over and everyone goes back into their houses and tries to get a good night's sleep, the thing you can't help but notice is the thick, heavy smell of burnt gunpowder hanging in the air. And you can see it. In fact, if there's not too much wind, whole Latin American cities will be engulfed in a gunpowder cloud that can actually last a day or two. And I'm talking about every city in Latin America. And that's hundreds and hundreds of cities. Now, when expats get together and sit around and talk, one of their favorite topics is global warming. You know, how much is man-made and how much is natural? Is it the cows and their methane, or power plants and cars and CO2? Well, one thing that we expats always mention that never gets in the international press is the caustic effect of these massive third-world pyrotechnic displays that just keep getting bigger and bigger year after year. We're all in agreement that somebody from the first world, an environmentalist, just has to study this. It's a wide-open subject for analysis, but nobody's doing it. For some enterprising grad student, it would be a great master's thesis, but that's another topic. Now, if you ask any expat who's been at one of these celebrations, he'll usually tell you the whole thing's kind of a downer. In fact, for me, the whole thing's kind of sad. But when you wake up the next day and take a walk outside, now that's when it hits you how sad and environmentally destructive the whole celebration really is. Because outside, in every neighborhood, and on every street, and in every gutter, there's piles and mounds of strange-looking garbage, the burnt, charred refuse of exploded fireworks. And I mean tons and tons of it, layer upon layer. And because Latin American cities have either non-existent, very inefficient, or just terribly understaffed street departments, all that burnt up fireworks refuse pretty much stays on the streets or gets blown around into ugly piles that can hang around as ugly reminders of the New Year's celebration for weeks, even months sometimes. And for the next few days, in the local newspapers, you'll begin to see the collateral damage that the celebration has caused. In every city, there's always a few major fires, at least a few people killed, burned, or blinded, but that never seems to put a dent in the festivities. Year after year, there's a growth in the sales of pyrotechnics, not a decline like you might imagine. And what do local governments have to say about this? What with all the damage the fireworks cause? Well, one diputado from Salvador told me, and by the way, a diputado is Latin for congressman. Anyway, he told me that Congress wouldn't think of banning fireworks. It's a cultural thing, he said, and if they outlawed it, they'd be depriving the common people of their favorite holiday. In other words, to ban fireworks would be political suicide. And another thing I should mention about that celebration night. You shouldn't be driving your car around between 6 o'clock and about 3 in the morning. Why? Because teenage kids in Latin America, like anywhere, are mischievous, and they like to launch their rockets and flares and Roman candles at passing cars. It's like up in the first world, where adolescent kids will do the same thing to your car, only up there they'll do it with snowballs. So be forewarned that on December 31st in Latin America, if you're driving your car, you're likely to get hit with a rocket or two, which is another good reason why you should never have a brand new car down in Latin America. But right now, I'd like to state for the record something that happens to nearly all male expats the first year they go down to Latin America. I don't know if it's the latent adolescent in us all, but it's a fact that every expat that I've ever talked to admits to that guilty pleasure of buying a ton of fireworks the first year he came down. And I know it has a lot to do with the fact that back where you come from, whether it's Europe, Canada, the United States, or wherever, you just can't buy that stuff. It's illegal and only available in the black market, which makes it too expensive and just not worth it. But once down in Latin America, you're like a kid in a candy store. At least at first, when you see all that high-powered stuff spread out on card tables at prices so cheap you just can't believe it. But believe me, expats get over it pretty fast. And in no time, you actually start to dislike the whole business. And as for me, I don't know if that means I'm growing up or I'm getting old.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, a one-of-a-kind show produced and compiled deep in the heart of Latin America. And of course, you can always email me with any of your questions about Latin America. expatfiles@progressiveradionetwork.com. See you next time. Nos vemos. South of the border, down Mexico way. A picture.